I think we sometimes just need to think about the power of recognizing our team members and the systems in which they operate outside of the working environment, and the role that those systems actually play to support them.
Hello and welcome to the podcast, 10 Lessons It Took Me 50 Years to Learn, where we dispense wisdom, not just information or mere fact, to an international audience of rising leaders. My name is Duff Watkins and I'm your host. This podcast is sponsored by the Professional Development Forum, which helps young professionals of any age accelerate their performance in their career in the modern workplace. And today you'll hear honest, practical advice that you can't find in any textbook because it took 50 years to learn this stuff. Our guest today is Eddie Grobler. Eddie is had a 20-plus year career in MasterCard, International MasterCard. You know, the one in your wallet? You know, this one with the logo? Do you have one as lime green as mine? No, you don't have one like that.
That's a nice color.
I know, isn't it? Yeah. Special card for special people, Eddie.
Of course, of course.
They just mailed it to me. I don't know where it came from. I met Eddie when he was heading Australasia for MasterCard, and since he was promoted to become executive vice president in the UK with a special project, which basically was the integration of a new company. But he's now back in Australia and non-retirement. Welcome, Eddie.
Thank you, Duff. And interesting in terms of retirement, you know, somebody said to me some time ago, there's no such a thing as retirement. It's rewirement. So after 20 years, I'm actually rewiring from MasterCard and actually putting the wires in somewhere else as well. But life is fun. It's really good.
Yeah, I know you're doing a variety of things. Philanthropic, I suppose, is one of them. Now, to start, let me ask you the first question. You come from South Africa, which is a developing country. Do you recall your first business lesson?
Yes, you know, this was in 1985 when I started to work with one of the banks in South Africa. And there was a person that I really always respected. He was not my direct boss. He was a boss, you know, my boss reported into him. Mm-hmm. He was a person that I always respected, and I felt that he had a lot of wisdom. But he actually reconfirmed the concept of ownership with me, you know, and taking ownership for everything that you do in life. Mm-hmm. And I think what made it so valuable to me is that he actually shared it in a story, a true African story with me. And then I can share the story with you if you want me to. But that really resonated with me, and it stayed for me for my life. And I've actually tried to share that with my family and even people that I'm mentoring as well. Is the whole concept of ownership and taking ownership for what you do and what you stand for.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. How about what have you unlearned lately? And by that, I mean something you absolutely positively knew to be true then, but now you realize is not the case.
Yeah, this is possibly a bit more in a philosophical way. You must keep in mind that I've been in corporate life for about 40 years. And, you know, when I retired, you know, it's obviously something that actually I realized. And this is the concept of that systems actually are bigger than individuals. And systems have their own kind of pace and their own kind of momentum. And then I'll compare it with an example, somebody said to me, it's like putting your hand in a bucket of water, and the bucket of water is corporate life. And then you take your hand out and it just flows, it just closes, you know. So sometimes you get into a phase in your life where you feel that you are the tail that's wagging the dog being the system or the company that you work for and that you make huge impact. But systems goes on. That doesn't imply that you can't make an impact on organizations and you can't actually contribute. That's definitely not what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is that, you know, I think all of us go through kind of phases in our lives where we feel if we're not part of the organization, they will definitely suffer and won't be able to move on. That's not true.
Yeah.
Organizations got their own rhythm. But I think the counter side of that coin is that you also always contribute and bring value to the organization. But that's something that I've realized.
Well, what did you unlearn before? Did you think that what did you think before you realized that? Which, by the way, is a hard lesson that everybody needs to learn.
Yeah, I think it's, and I don't like the word, but it's the concept of leaving your kind of footprints in organization or some people say legacy, but it's legacy. A strong term to you. But you know, it's that kind of concept that I've unlearned, you know, is that you must respect kind of systems, and systems got their own kind of momentum going forward. Mm-hmm. And you must respect the fact that people possibly will forget the contribution that you've made. It's not a personal thing. It's just systems move on, you know. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I think it's possibly more through the lens where I'm now, where I'm looking back on corporate life for a long time. And, you know, I've been part of that system and, you know, reflecting on myself as well for people that I worked for. I never, when they left the organization, say retired or moved on, I'm not always very good to keep kind of contact and keep that going. Mm-hmm. And that's a kind of a thing that I'm experiencing now as well, is that life goes on. And in the phase of my life where I'm now, is I spend a bit more time in developing and creating networks, you know, possibly a bit more time and energy than in the past.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, let's begin with the 10 lessons. I believe lesson number one is the African proverb that you mentioned before. The answer is in your hands.
Yes, it's all about ownership, Duff. And then just the African story here is that it goes like this. You know, there was a wise old man in a village in Africa, and he had wisdom and always had kind of answers to everything. And two youths in the village decided that they're going to try and catch him out. And there was kind of a nestling that actually fell out of the nest, a little bird, and they took the bird in their hands, and they actually went to this wise old man, and they said to the old man, "We've got a little bird in our hands. Is it alive or is it dead?" And he realized if he's going to say the bird is alive, they will just squeeze it and say, "No, it's dead." And if he says it's dead, they will just open their hands and say, "No, it's alive." And his answer, and that's the one thing that resonated with me, his answer was that the answer is in your hands. And it's about kind of taking ownership for what you do, ownership for the business that you run, ownership for the people that you work with, the team that you work with. The kind of, I think the psychological term for this is internal locus of control. Mm-hmm. And not to blame the system, but to take kind of responsibility for yourself and the team and your team members. So that was, you know, something that I've learned, like I've said to you, in 1983, you know, with the story that I actually, when this person shared it with me, and it just stuck with me for the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. Interesting thing is I've actually read it, you know, it was in 2008. I was on a flight from Sydney to Auckland, and there was a video on the plane on a study that they've done in Dunedin in New Zealand. It's one of the longest studies that's been going on for since 1972, where they track individuals from birth through their life stages. And the one thing that actually stands out in that study is that the concept of self-control with children is a strong predictor of success in future life. Mm-hmm. So that just reinforced this simple story of the answer is in your hands. And that's something that I've always actually tried to live out, and also to share with my teams and the systems in which I've operated.
Well, first of all, can you give me the email address of that African wise man? Because we'd really like to have him on the show. He seems like he knows some stuff. But
I'm not sure if he's still alive.
Rather than getting duped by the young know-it-all, so he put the onus back onto them, which really is where it is all the time with us, whether we want to acknowledge it or not.
Yeah.
All right, lesson number two, culture matters and always will.
Yeah, I think this is obviously a very broad concept, but I think the main thing here for me is the whole concept of purpose and direction, and the responsibility of a person that leads a team is to create a culture around, you know, purpose and values and also in terms of strategy. Just to actually reflect back on this, Duff, is that in 1993, I was part of a massive merger between four banks in South Africa. Mm-hmm. And obviously, this was just before South Africa moved into democracy. And it was a very turbulent time, and it was a time of a high level of uncertainty. And, you know, I started to do some work based on a work that a person by the name of Joel Barker did. And Joel's focus is on the power of vision, but the underlying thing is how important it is to have a purpose, not only for individuals, but also for organizations and even countries. And there's a common thread, you know, if the purpose is clear and if it's consistent and if it's articulated in a consistent way, that translates into success. And it translates into a positive culture that actually facilitates growth and facilitates success. But the role that the leader in that context play is extremely important. And that's something that I actually, since the 1990s, since I've worked with that, I actually always kept that with me. And he also actually pulled it through to some of the work that Viktor Frankl did, you know, in mm-hmm. the concentration camps, you know, and he reflects on that in his Man's Search of Meaning, is that people who survive the concentration camps are consistently, again, people with purposes and with a positive view of the future. And again, that translates into culture, but this whole concept of a positive view of future and for a leader to talk about that in the context of the organization or the structures in which you work, I think is extremely important.
Mm. How do you establish a culture? Okay, you came from South Africa. When we met, you were running MasterCard in Australia. Then you went to the UK, which is another culture, and you had to assimilate a business that they bought and into the MasterCard culture. How do you, as the leader, as the boss, how do you establish a culture in a place?
You know, obviously this is a very broad concept, but I think, again, it starts off, you know, what is the vision? What is the strategy? What are the values of the organization that you want to live out? And then I think to have a very clear plan and a simple plan to articulate that. Mm-hmm. And to consistently communicate and demonstrate that in the way that you behave. And it brings me to my third lesson that I've learned, you know, in terms of this. And then it is so important for a leader to consistently communicate the strategy, to consistently communicate the values, to consistently communicate the purpose of the organization. I think, again, in psychological terms, they refer to it as to internalize it into the organization. But I always say it's like writing in the snow. You do it over and over again, and at one stage, it will start to stick, you know. Mm-hmm. But again, I think sometimes, you know, some of us, or, you know, you do a strategy and you work on the values, and it's something that you just then actually park somewhere. But the important thing here is to consistently write in the snow until it sticks and not stop writing in the snow. You know, I think you need to do it over and over again.
Yeah, this is your third point, your third lesson, that you're writing in the snow. We're all basically writing in the snow. So you have to write, rewrite. You have to affirm, then confirm, then reaffirm in order to, and you're saying in a company culture, you do that through your behavior, through your actions, through your acts, through your words, and the way you described it, so that it is one coherent whole. Then it becomes a lot more believable too.
Absolutely. I think it must be authentic as well, you know, and it that links back to your integrity as a leader. You know, if it's not consistent in terms of the way that you behave, the way that you live it out, you know, obviously you won't gain any traction. But you know, sometimes I can remember many times where you communicate the values, you communicate and you live it, and you communicate the strategy, and you sit in a smaller group and you feel, wow, people just don't get it. And the important thing there is not to give up, but to keep on living it out, but keep on writing in the snow. It will stick at one stage, you know. So I think that is, I think for me, that's one extremely important part of for a leader, is to consistently communicate and live the values and the strategy and the purpose of the organization so that it is quite clear.
Mm. All right, lesson number four. No one's ever asked me this, by the way, Eddie. What's your decency quotient? And I'm glad no one's ever asked me about that. I'm not quite sure.
This is something that, you know, I've been exposed to quite recently. I think this is about 6 years ago. We obviously know that there's the intellectual component, and then they refer to emotional intelligence. But the CEO of MasterCard, RJ Bunga, introduced this concept of the decency quotient. And what it's about, it is about wanting something positive for everyone and to treat people with respect. RJ, for me, is a wonderful reference point. He lived it out. He's just got it in his DNA to be like that and to live it out.
He's the former head of MasterCard International Worldwide, right?
He's still the CEO. And, you know, you will actually, I think his new role early next year will be possibly to be the chair of MasterCard, and somebody else will take over from him. But RJ did a phenomenal job with MasterCard in a way that he's actually transformed the organization. And I think embedded in that is this whole concept in terms of the culture that he's created around treating people with respect and decency. And it's actually, I think the way that it actually translated into, at least with the leadership of that organization, is I think it's one of the best companies to work for. And I think it just reflects back to the things that we've discussed earlier as well. But RJ has actually put a bit of a tag on this and said, this is what we should do. We should all actually be aware and try to live out this concept of the decency quotient. And, you know, I've tried to integrate it. It's something that I think as when you actually responsible for other people, you know, I think one of the basic things that you need to do is to have that whole concept of respect for people that you work with and respect for the environment that you work in.
Now, this seems kind of bleeding obvious, really. Now, you've been in business 40 years, so why does this message need to be written in the snow, repeated, affirmed, reaffirmed over and over again? It's kind of basic, isn't it? Or shouldn't it be in business?
It should be, but I think as part of this, you know, it's if you get into the normally kind of daily activities and stuff like that, you sometimes, you know, you get kind of in the operational zone, and you get so kind of bogged in things that's possibly urgent but not important. I think this basic stuff that we're talking about now is not important, and it's not urgent, or it's important and not urgent. It's something that really are extremely building blocks in terms of the future and the success of organization. And I feel, if I may say, this basic kind of components actually played a role in, I think, the success that I had as a leader. It's not rocket science. It's just to actually keep the basic stuff in mind and to live it out. You know, that's the important thing.
All right. Lesson number 5, your mindset matters a lot.
Yes. You know, this is, again, a very basic thing. Is the whole concept of having kind of a positive mindset. In a way, it reflects back on ownership, you know, but you know, if you develop kind of a lifestyle and an approach to be positive about things and positive about outcomes, it creates energy within yourself, and it creates energy within your teams as well. This is something that I think I was lucky enough to get from my dad. I actually grew up in an environment where I was quite involved in sport.
Well, let me guess, rugby. Somebody from South Africa plays rugby. Am I right?
Yeah. How did you know? So, I mean, in team sport, you learn a lot. But, you know, I think this whole thing of a positive mindset is important. And there are kind of two quotes that I always keep in mind, you know, and I actually got this from my dad. The first one is, champions may stumble or fall, but they never quit. And a little story that I can actually share with you here is that, you know, I was 12 years old, 13 years old, and I played for my province rugby at that stage. And one of the big things that happened is we played an early curtain raiser for an international game between France and South Africa. And the day that they announced the team, I've played the whole season for this provincial team. But the day when they announced this team to play this curtain raiser, which was just the highlight, everybody actually, I think that was a dream at that stage of your life. I was left out. I was not part of the team. And, you know,
that really hurts at that age too, not being selected, you know, I mean, that's it hurts at any age, but you know,
I can remember that extremely well, but, you know, and my dad, he actually was in a position to support me and always be at my games. And he was at that practice when the team was announced as well. And, when I walked off, I was in tears, and I actually said to my dad, "Dad, this is not going to be the last time that I play provincial rugby. I will play again. Champions may stumble or fall, but never quit." And he, in a way, used that throughout my life, you know, where he actually put a bit of a label on me as a champion every time that I feel I struggle a bit. But that is just that positive energy, you know, is not to give up, but also to see this kind of as challenge. And then the other quote that I got is, you know, that my dad also shared with me at that stage is that, you know, extraordinary performances come from ordinary people with extraordinary attitudes. And it's amazing how a positive attitude just rubs off on people. And I think all of us have been exposed to people with a negative or glass empty attitude. That sucks energy, you know, it just pulls energy. But I think a positive kind of mindset generates energy and energize people, energize yourself, and energize the system in which you operate. You can't be successful with a glass half full kind of attitude. That's just not possible. And as a leader, you must be extremely, extremely aware of that. Even when it's a challenging time, you know, and then you've got that kind of moment of weakness where you want to blame the system or you want to blame something, that makes a huge impact on the team. And I think as a leader, you need to be very aware of that. This is where this kind of positive mindset is very important, is to share that, always the positive mindset. I think that's extremely important.
A psychological term for that, which I like, is called reframing. You take a situation and then you reframe it in such a way that makes more sense to you. And I think that
this is the first one for me. I haven't done that before. Makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, whatever the situation is, you say you might have an initial visceral reaction. Oh, it's bad. It's negative. It's hostile. And wait a second, you know, reframe it. What's good about this is always a good question. And what you end up doing is, as you know, it's what you tell yourself, the conversation you're having with yourself, because you're always interpreting the situation, reality, or your perception of reality. And that's an ongoing thing. And that's a question I learned from somebody to ask, what's good about this situation? And of course you want to say nothing, but that's not right. Okay. After you answer that, then say, okay, what's good about this? And if you look, it won't be hard to see something good about it.
Framing. No, that's a good concept. I'll definitely take that one.
Lesson number 6, far or fast, you choose.
Yeah. You know, there's a saying that, and this actually deals with teams. You know, like I said, you know, I grew up in a sport environment playing team sport, and you know, I'm passionate about how teams operate and effective teams. But this far or fast you choose, you know, the saying goes like this, you know, if you want to go fast, go on your own. But if you want to go far, go together. Mm-hmm. And it links back to everything that we've shared with each other in terms of what is the purpose, where do you want to go, consistently communicate that and try to mobilize your team and people to move with you in that direction. It's not sustainable to try and go fast. You know, that this just doesn't work, you know, on your own, and specifically in corporate life. You must understand this concept that if you want to have an impact, not only in terms of the organization, but if you want to have an impact in business, you can't do it on your own. You can't go far on your own. The only way that you can go far is with people and with your team and in a corporate environment, possibly cross-functional with other teams, with other kind of components in organization. And then this is this whole concept of networking in organizations. It's extremely important. And, you know, it's something that I always remind myself, you know, is you tend sometimes you want to go fast, but just keep in mind, you know, if you want to achieve this, is you need to work and you need to take the system with you in the different components of the system.
My way of saying that, and I tell young people in business, it's not me, it's we. It's always we. And I get a lot of me sometimes.
Yeah, well, I did this and I did that. And I think this is where also, I think the way that we communicate is important, is we must be so careful not to say, you know, I achieved this, I did that. It's always, you know, I think mm-hmm. to recognize that mm-hmm. in terms of the team that you play with or the team that you work with.
Mm. Lesson number 7, make recognition your job. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think it links into the previous one, you know, is that your success is embedded in the success of the team and in success in the bigger scheme of the organization. But it's, again, I think, Dave, to something that you said earlier in our discussion, it's not rocket science, but it is so basic. As a leader, you must make recognition your job. I think sometimes we can also take recognition a bit further as well, and we don't do enough of that. Let me share a story with you that I've experienced, and it actually had a huge impact on my life. This was, I think, in the early 90s, when I worked, was also in the financial services industry. And the boss that I worked for he was really a role model for me as well in terms of how to do things. But one day when I arrived home, my wife actually showed me a letter that he wrote to her. And in the letter, he actually recognized the role that I play in the team and organization. And he also recognized the role that she plays in my support. Now, this is 30 years later, Duff, and we still have that letter. It is an mm-hmm. extremely important part for me. And I've started to use that practice as well. You know, I wrote many, many letters to my team members, kind of meaningful others, you know, partners, parents. It is something that I think I'm possibly recognized for, but it's a practice that, you know, I've actually got from a boss that I've worked for. And this why, you know, I'm saying is that recognition is we sometimes just need to think about the power of recognizing our team members and the systems in which they operate outside of the working environment. Mm-hmm. And the role that those systems actually play to support them. You know, I'm a firm believer in that. You know, every end of the year, I actually wrote a handwritten letter to all of my team members, you know, thanking them and their families for the support. And I think that is, again, extremely basic thing, but I've been on the receiving end of that and I've experienced the value of that. I think it is something that we as leaders also, again, possibly need to make a bit more time for. You know, there's a normal kind of structures in organizations which we can use to recognize, and that's good. And I think we need to do it, but I think it's just going that extra step. That extra mile.
Well, I always say, I mean, it's the phrase for it is psychic income, you know, the expression of appreciation of somebody. And it costs the company nothing, nothing. And yet, why, you know, it's such a rare currency. I'll tell you a funny story because you just made me think of one. When I used to run psychotherapy groups in the Sydney psychiatric hospitals, I was dealing with the sickest of the sick. And I had a young nurse who was assisting me, just gather the patients up and got to get the chairs in a circle, things like that. And so it was after Easter because the chocolates were on sale. So I bought some chocolates on sale. And then the next day I went into the hospital and I said, I can't remember her name. I said, a small gift to thank you for your assistance and helping me with the groups over the course of these months. And she looks at me, stunned, and then she grabs me by the tie, pulls me forward and kisses me right there on the ward in the hospital and says, "That's the first time I've ever been appreciated in my career."
Wow.
But you know, think about that. A professional nurse who had been working, she wasn't a kid, she'd been working for years. And the first time, nobody ever said, "Thanks, you're doing a great job," or "I appreciate your efforts." And I see that so many times. I hear it so many times. A commercial version of that, I was talking to a guy within a client company, and he said to me, and I've always remembered this, "Yeah," he said, "I could make money elsewhere working for another company, but I'm having so much damn fun. Why would I leave?" You know, he's having an experience, a positive experience on their workforce. And it was because of the people around him and the work that he was doing. Mm-hmm. And it, for me, it goes back to creating a culture that you were talking about, becoming sort of, I think the official word for it is an employer of preference. But really, it's just having a bunch of people that you like associating with, is kind of how I see it.
You know, and everything, just listening to you and reflecting on what we've discussed up until now, it actually goes back to RJ Bunga's kind of decency coefficient. It's just to be decent and to treat people with respect. And I think that the challenge for a leader is to do it in difficult times when a team is not performing, a team is not achieving, is to consistently be able to do that authentically and in a way where it's got credibility as well. Mm-hmm. What was the term that you used?
Psychic income. Yeah.
Psychic income.
Just that flow of positive appreciation.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be, you know, it kind of cracks me up. There are whole companies, industries that are built about giving tangible rewards and prizes.
Cartier watches.
Yeah, Cartier watches. I mean, it's like, you know, and what do people really crave is the psychic income of actually feeling appreciated. I don't mean bullshit.
Yeah.
I mean, but genuinely feeling appreciated.
Yeah. I must remember this then. Okay.
Point number 8. Now, you'll have to explain this one to me. I don't understand. Reverse mentoring. See, that would imply that I don't know everything, see? And that's what I'm having difficulty with. So explain reverse mentoring.
Yeah. I think, again, you know, in a way, when you get older, you must also understand that there's new generations coming through in the system. And not only new generations, but, you know, Gen Y, Gen Xs and everything as well. And you typically in a kind of a baby boomer kind of mindset. You know, I grew up where the management structure was on planning, organization, leading, and executing. You know, that was the mindset that I grew up in, and in a hierarchical organization with hierarchical structures. And obviously, you try to transform yourself as a leader, and you do that. And one of the ways that I've actually tried to do that is to implement the concept of reverse mentoring. So what it's about, Duff, is that to identify one of your high potential young and upcoming professionals in the team, or and to use him as a kind of a mentor for you in terms of how they approach life, how they approach kind of the work environment, what is important, and how they actually would like to address things like that. And, you know, it's something that I've started to do about 8 years ago. And it was of huge value for me to actually get kind of insights in terms of how the new generations think about work. I've briefly touched on it, but, you know, when I started to work, structures, you know, we worked in hierarchical organizations. And then we moved on to kind of matrix organizations, which was, again, from a leadership point of view, something that, you know, I had consciously had to work on and how I adapt my kind of leadership style. And quite recently, or the last 5 years, I think organizations actually moved from kind of matrix organizations to network organizations, where it was more about how the network comes together and works together. And I think in a context of the COVID now as well, where more and more people work from home. And, you know, I've heard about somebody that actually, she's got a kind of a global team and she hasn't met two of the team members in person ever. They've been working together for 3 years. But this whole concept of, you know, reverse mentoring for a person that I think is in a possibly a different kind of life stage was very important for me and to help me to understand that process. So I think it's a conscious thing as well, to consciously try and understand, you know, what the mindset is of the newer generation what works. So that is reverse mentoring. The other two components that I think is important is the concept of sponsoring, where you the sponsor or where you the sponsored person. But let me talk about the scenario where you the sponsored person. Working in a global organization, in a multicultural organization, I think it's extremely important to have sponsors in the organization and to consciously work on that. And specifically, you know, I think possibly, for example, for me moving from South Africa to Australia and from Australia to London, what I consciously did is I tried to identify individuals in the organization and or even outside of the organization that can sponsor me. and that can help me with the transition and can help me with the cultural components of the new culture in which I operate. You know, for example, when I moved from South Africa to Australia, you know, I identified a person and he added a lot of value to my career. But one of the, you know, he said to me two things. The first thing he said to me is, don't ever compare Australia with South Africa. Australians don't like it. And I thought, my goodness, we like sport. Both come, you know, our countries like sport. We've got more or less the same sense of humor. We've got kind of a similar kind of lifestyles as well. Mm-hmm. And I've questioned him on that. And he said to me, you know, the one thing that you don't see is that Australia is a developed country and South Africa is a developing country. And there's this sensitivity around that. Just keep that in mind. So that was the one lesson. The other lesson was, for example, my home language is Afrikaans, you know, and we use the word that's in our language the same as must in English, but it's not a strong word, mm-hmm. but we use quite a lot. So we tend to use the word must quite a lot when we say, you must do that, we must do that. And what he said to me is, be very careful. It's a very strong word. Mm-hmm. How you apply it, you know, and just that awareness that he's created actually helped me quite a lot. It's two simple kind of examples, but it's actually, it helped a lot for me to...
But they're excellent examples, yeah.
Yeah, to establish myself in a culture. So I think specifically in global multicultural organizations, that is important to think about the concept of sponsorship and work consciously to try and identify that. And then the other one is obviously the normal one in terms of mentoring. And then there's a bit of a difference between, you know, sponsorship and mentoring for me. But mentoring for me is where it's more focused in terms of what can make you more efficient in your work environment. And there's a more possibly a technical component to that.
All right. Lesson number 9. Your career or any relationship is not a one-day game. Or a one-day match, if you're a cricket fan.
Yeah, I think it's a four-day or five-day game, you know. But let me give you the context here. In terms of, you know, the social media and technology, we live in an environment nowadays of instant gratification. You know, if you want to buy something tonight at 11 o'clock, you buy it and you get it tomorrow. You know, if you want to send a message to somebody, you WhatsApp him now and you get a kind of feedback immediately. You know, and the whole concept of you know, even emails, I can remember, I suppose you can as well, the days that we've actually operated with faxes and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. The communication loop was long. But nowadays, we live in an environment, it's fast, it's instant, and we need this kind of instant gratification and do things fast. That is all good. But there are two things in life that instant gratification is not possible. And one is relationships. You know, relationship is like writing in the snow. You do it over and over again. It's a lot of building work over a longer time just to develop sustainable relationships. Mm-hmm. So that's the one thing. And the other one is to develop your career. You know, it's not a one-day game. It is something that you build on. You've got a purpose. You've got a long-term plan. And then you focus on that. You're positive about it. But it's something that you build over a longer term period. So the whole concept of instant success is in relationships and careers is just, it doesn't exist.
The reality is incremental success is really how it happens most of the time. And, you know, even a band who becomes an overnight success after 10 years, you know, it's all incremental success that people just don't see or appreciate. Or authors. I mean, I read a memoir by Stephen King, who's one of the more prolific authors, and the difficulties he had in just getting an article accepted or a short story. Yeah. I mean, it was just just indefatigable effort on his part, and clearly he got the hang of it, so he's done pretty well for himself.
And the amazing thing for me as well is you get kind of breakthroughs or this incremental success sometimes when you don't expect it. Mm-hmm. But if you reflect on it, you know, it's been a building process as well, you know, so I think it's so true, you know, it's an incremental process. I like that.
Well, and yeah, I'm quoting some psychologists, but incremental success tends to work best and last longest as well. You know, if you think about it, I mean, there's not a whole lot of rocket science to that either. I mean, it's not any sport. I mean, not many people are born superstars. Maybe there are a few statistical outliers, but they're not us, you know, so... yeah. All right. Lesson number 10, don't jerk the knee or shoot the mouth.
Yeah, I suppose this is about be careful what you say. And then sometimes where you get in the heat of the moment, you tend to say stuff as well. And that's in my experience when it's good just to say, okay, you know, take a deep breath, think about this, and then be careful in terms of not to knee-jerk and not to react in a way that can actually create kind of harm. So that's the one concept here. And the other one is, I've worked for somebody at one stage in my career who always, or not always, but he frequently discussed his boss with me in a negative way. And in a way that undermined my respect for him, you know, and it is something that I've actually applied in my career is never to say something negative about a coworker or a boss, but say positive stuff. If you can't say positive stuff, don't say it. You know, it just creates a culture, and I suppose you can use the term white anting as well, but that just undermines any kind of element of a positive winning culture. So that's why I say, you know, I'm not trying to imply that you should be over controlled in terms of what you say, but it's the how and the when. And I think as a leader, you need to have the awareness of that as well. Sometimes you say something that actually has a broader impact that you think it has. We shouldn't underestimate that. And I think that's why the two things for me here is, you know, be careful what you say. And then the second one is don't undermine coworkers or even your boss in a way that just undermines your own integrity.
All right. That finishes our 10 lessons learned. But I would like to ask you about a story, because this is one of the great management lessons, life lessons that I learned from you a few years ago here in Sydney. Let's see if you remember this. We were catching up and you had a new boss at this point in your career. The previous boss you got along well with very well. Yeah. This new boss did not get along well with at all, and it was really becoming problematic. And as I recall, you'll have to tell the story, you kind of had a self-talk session with yourself deciding that I got to figure this out.
Yes, indeed. I mean, the context here is if I can remember that very well, Duff, is, you know, the person that appointed me in Australia was a person that I had a huge amount of respect for him. And he was my sponsor. He was my mentor. And, you know, I was, in a way, I think one of his core team members as well. So, and when he retired, he was replaced obviously with a new person, and this person's kind of mission in life was to try and change the whole system, and more specifically focus on people that were possibly too close to the previous leader. And I was one of them. So I felt the brunt of that, and I felt very, very uncomfortable. And, you know, I was placed in a hot seat many times in front of my team for possibly not always the right reasons. And this is something when you go just through the process and you say, okay, is this worthwhile to do this? And again, I think if you think about the 10 building blocks that we've discussed today, you know, is what is your purpose? You know, be positive about this. You know, be consistent in terms of what you do and so on. And, you know, I've obviously had a long chat with one of my best coaches, is my wife. And, you know, she said to me, listen, this is what you stand for, and do your best and let's see where it lands. And, you know, I've actually made a conscious decision that, you know, champions may stumble or fall, but they never quit. And I'm not going to quit on this one. Long story short, and I'm extremely proud of that, is that this person was possibly, just before he left the organization, one of my biggest sponsors. We still have contact today. I think we call each other, I know, we are friends. You know, the satisfaction that you get out of that to change a person's kind of view on you, and his kind of perception was possibly built on that I've been too close to the previous boss. But to be able to change that kind of mindset was, for me, was extremely, extremely satisfying. The change was based on our outputs. The change was based on the success that we had as a team here in Australia. We won market share. We've actually, in terms of the revenue that we generated for the bigger organization, we moved from number 5 in the world to number 2 in the world. So I made it easier for him as well to accept me as well, I suppose. But again, that's the kind of the, I think all the, or most of the issues that, or components that we've discussed earlier today is consistently to apply that. And again, not to be kind of have this external locus of control and to blame it on your boss, but to focus on what you and a team can do. How can you actually perform this? How can you actually achieve your kind of purpose and your strategy? I think at the end of the day, something that I'm extremely proud of is that most of the people that I've worked for, we have still very good relationships. I think I shared with you the other day is that this person that shared this African story with me, I haven't had any contact with him for about 30 years now. And about 2 or 3 weeks ago, I actually received on LinkedIn a message from one of my previous bosses in that same time. And he said to me that this person actually is turning 90 and they would love to have for me to send him a message, you know, in terms of wishing him all of the best and so on. And that was extremely special. So we've got contact now again, and it's very, very special.
The reason I like the story with the difficult to get along with boss is because it shows, it reveals who has to make the effort. You know, I say to a lot of younger people, stop waiting for the boss to come to his or her senses and recognize your brilliance. Yeah. You are the one. You take responsibility. Yes. All the points you just said, you know, the onus is on you to figure it out, to work it out, to find a way. It may or may not be easy. And that's why I quote that story that you tell me. And I knew that it had a happy ending. I didn't know the ending was that happy, but I'm not surprised. So I'm proud of that story too, Eddie. And I did. It wasn't even me.
I suppose we can end where we started. The answer is in your hand. If you want to make it work, you can make it work. Yeah, I'm also extremely proud of that.
It's a great achievement to me. A great achievement. Period. And it's a really good achievement. A great achievement in the corporate world as well. Okay, we will finish here today on that note. You've been listening to the international podcast, 10 Lessons It Took Me 50 Years to Learn. This episode is produced by Robert Hosrey and is sponsored by the Professional Development Forum. PDF provides webinars, social media discussions, podcast parties, anything you want, everything you need. You can find out more about them at professionaldevelopmentforum.org. Best of all, everything they offer is free. Thank you for listening today, and we'd love to hear from you, by the way. You can email us podcast@10lessonslearned.com.